We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Michael and I are going to do a little bit of recap, and then we're going to hit you with our Western Conference preview, which of course will probably stretch over a couple podcasts. But before we get to any of that, I'm not talking right off the bat injuries, because that's all I've been thinking about for about a week. First thing I want to say to you, Michael, is, you know, we didn't even need to get Anthony Davis. Right around when Chris Paul was leaving this team, we drafted this guy named Darren Collison. And in that last game, in 25 minutes, he had 19.7 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 steals. And Anthony Davis, in 29 minutes, had 19 points, 8 rebounds, and 1 assist, and 3 steals. We should have just stuck with Darren Collison all along.
Some people actually believe that at the time, but it's funny that none of the teams that have Darren Collison ever believe him. I mean, Sacramento went out and got Rondo, maybe one of the worst starting point guards in the NBA last year, just doing Sacramento things. But yeah, we didn't get to watch the game. There's some highlights, but yeah, I wouldn't mind having Darren Collison right now with all the injuries, even though I know you don't want to talk about it right away.
I tweeted this, you know, right before this game. There are 8 injured Pelicans, and whether we're talking different levels of injury, like, you know, I'm sure Eric Gordon would, well, I'm not sure anymore. It's possible Eric Gordon would have been playing that game if it was regular season, and some other things might be true, but there was literally at that point 8 people who had some level of injury at that time that was a real injury. And that the roster is only 15 people. Like, more than half of our team is injured right now.
Well, I mean, luckily in the preseason, it's allowed to be a little bigger than that. Otherwise, we might not have enough guys to play games. Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. Again, we don't know with all of them how serious they are. This podcast, I'm guessing, will be released a couple hours before we get our update on Tyreke Evans. And, you know, I know Alvin Gentry says he doesn't think it's anything serious and he's just feeling a little pain, but I don't trust that at all. And, you know, there are other scuttlebutt out there that it might be a little bit more serious than that. I mean, we talked about whether we're at the tipping point last week you said we were. I said we're one injury away. Either way, we're over it now because Babbitt's hurt. Tyreek is probably, is going to have to miss at least the rest of the preseason. And even if most of these guys come back, you know, before the regular season starts, it still would have been nice to have full training camp and preseason games. I mean, I know Gentry's original plan was to play guys pretty much close to their regular rotation in the last two preseason games. Now that's definitely not happening. So, again, you're going to have to be in season kind of working on the chemistry and, you know, guys getting to play each other. Just it seems like no matter when it is, this team just can't put together forget a whole season. I would love to see this team with 20, 30 games in a row where the same guys are going out there and playing every night. But I don't know if we're going to get that. The only positive thing I could say is I'd rather have 4 to 6 week injuries happening at the beginning of October than the beginning of January because, you know, there's a chance that only a handful of games are missed instead of 15 to 20.
Yeah, that's true. What I find is really funny about the box score for this particular game is, you know, Luke Babbitt, Quincy Pondexter, Alexis Ajinsa, Omar Asik, Norris Cole. These are all guys who have, like, actually declared injuries that we know timelines for. But they're all listed as DNP coaches' decisions. And then there's Eric Gordon, who DNP'd for an outer oblique strain. Why does he get, like, such a specific injury? And these other guys are just coaches' decision out. Like, I don't even get that.
Yeah, I don't know who puts those together. I mean, technically, they're all the coach's decision. The coach could technically make them go out there. So, all technically a coach's decision.
Well, Tyreek Evans was technically listed as DNP, not with team. So, I guess the coach couldn't make him play.
Yeah, I mean, the injuries are frustrating, I think, and we touched on this a little in the last podcast. I don't know about you, but again, guys missing a handful of games, even if the Pelicans start off 2-5, which as long as they still have Anthony Davis, I don't think it's going to happen anyway. But even if they do, I'm not that worried about that over an 82-game stretch. What I am worried about a little bit is with the Babbitt injury, that's the third muscle injury that we've seen. I mean, the Cole one is flukish. Anybody could get a turned ankle, whatever. You can't really put that on increased running or increased pace or whatever. But we saw pretty much the third big guy go down with some kind of strained or, muscle, pulled muscle, strained muscle. That's starting to worry me a little bit as a trend. I mean, do you think that's completely coincidence? Do you think that that's something to put on a training staff on Gentry running these guys more than they're used to? Do you see a trend here, or is that still kind of random to you?
So, I mean, I don't know anything of what the training staff's doing to keep them healthy or prepare them for the stuff. So I can't say anything about the training staff. I will say this is like one of the weird things about kind of the way people are talking about Alvin Gentry and what he's doing with his team in the preseason and in training camp. Is I remember when Byron Scott came in and took over this team and he basically, you know, he did the Byron Scott thing, toughness, grit. But the first thing he said and everybody in the training camp said was, oh, he has us running nonstop. We're running all the time. This is hell training camp. We're working so hard. And Alvin Gentry comes in and is like, oh, we're going to have a fun offense. We're going to run and run and run and have lots of fun running and shooting and running. And then everybody says, well, we came into training camp and it's hell. We're running. Is there really any difference between what these two guys are doing, but one is portrayed as a martinet who's behind the times and one is Alvin Gentry who's fun and bubbly happiness? Both these guys are working their guys like dogs in training camp, and that's going to impact something. Somebody's going to pull something if that happens, correct? Am I stupid in thinking that?
Yeah, I mean, we see. I would say 90% of NBA camps have the same narrative. If we were, you know, in Memphis, I'm sure, you know, there's some kind of positive outlook that's this guy's getting in better shape, or the coach is, you know, doing this or that that's so different. So, yeah, I think it's just perception, and Gentry coming off a title where Byron Scott, you know, his last couple seasons in different stops haven't been so well, and he's kind of a, you know, a laughing stock with the media with his not wanting to shoot threes in the era of the three ball. So, yeah, it's all how it's portrayed, and guys are running in all 30 camps, and I can't imagine that the Pelicans are running 50% more than another team. I think all these must – I mean, if you had to say the four least athletic guys, the three guys who have muscle injuries, they'd be three of the four with Kendrick Perkins as the other one, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, you got big lumbering guys who probably
– Well, I don't know, Ryan Anderson, but then he did come in ripped.
I mean, he's in –
does he look ripped to you?
I mean, he's in better shape than the average guy in the street. I would still say he's more athletic or in better shape or more flexible than Babbitt or Ajinsa or Asik. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that's part of it. But, I mean, that's something that, I don't know. Again, you're right. You can't blame it on the trainers. We have no clue what's going on. And I think that's what makes this the most frustrating is the on-court stuff. You and I could run the numbers. We could use the eye test. We could talk to other objective people who know the game really well. And we could figure a lot of that out. The injuries have been the thing that have always been the most frustrating for me as a fan and as a writer, because we have access to what, maybe 5% of all the information we would need in order to form some kind of conclusion or have some kind of predictive success moving forward, not to mention we would have to know what the other 29 teams do and what we do different. I mean, so I don't know. It's a frustrating thing, and you also have to wonder about the players themselves, you know, and how many of them are injury prone if such thing exists. But again, without all these injuries, you know, there has been some positive, or at least somewhat exciting, maybe, is that with the injuries happening, got rid of some of the dead weight bigs and brought in two point guards that I would say at least one is going to make the team, if not both. So what did you think about Bo McCaleb and Nate Robinson being added? Either one excite you, intrigue you, do anything for you at all?
So the hardest part about this is Nate Robinson. I don't really know what he's got left, because I didn't see him last year even one time. Somehow I just completely missed seeing him play even a minute. The year before, he looked like he was slowing down a little bit. His numbers show that he's been shooting a little worse the past couple seasons. So I don't know what Nate had left. If you told me that, you know, this Pelicans team was going to have Drew Holiday and Eric Gordon, and then they had to fill in with a third guard until Evans and Cole comes back, and they said, oh, we signed Nate Robinson from 2 years ago, and he's going to be that guy for, you know, 25 minutes or whatever, I would have been happy with that. Like, Nate was a perfectly serviceable backup guard, and he could be really exciting at times. And so if that's what we got, great, but I'm not sure that's what we got. He is, you know, he's hit 30, and the little tiny point guards at age 30 do not turn out very well very quickly. So that was my take on Nate. Bo McCaleb, you know, so I've gone and looked at, there are sites that will tell you how to translate Euro stats, like based on other guards who've come over, and Bo McCaleb's translated stats, you can't use his last year because he was out for a lot of the season with an injury, but the season before, his translated stats in the NBA would have him shooting about 43% from the field and getting about 12 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists a game.
Per 36 minutes or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually per 30, I think, because they do the 30 in Europe because there's 40-minute games. But, yeah, I mean, they're decent guard numbers for a guard who handles the ball a lot.
Does that site, can you transfer from the what the stats might be from the Provo Rec Center to NBA. If I were to drop my stats in there from when I play pickup, is there any way to know what I would put up?
Unfortunately, it's only EuroLeague.
Okay.
And that's like Bo's. It's really funny. You can go look for Bo's stats, and you'll see like his Italian league numbers and his Macedonian national team numbers and his Turkish league numbers make him look like a god. Like he scores like 26 points per 30 minutes, and he's 8 rebounds, and he shoots 40% from 3 and 70% from the field, and Bo McCaleb would be like the best man since sliced bread. But then those are that'd be like, you know, I don't know, the local D League affiliates playing each other. It's less talent than that. It's, I don't even know how to describe. There isn't maybe the new American League that just signed Bryce Young. It's the EuroLeague is the teams that the local leagues compete to send anywhere between 1 and 3 teams to the EuroLeague. And those EuroLeague teams are the best in Europe, and they all play each other. And the good teams from there, their stars are usually good enough to be rotation players in the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm not – I think, first of all, I think this will kind of depend on what we hear from the Tyreek Evans injury front. But I am – fully expecting that now both of these guys, I think these are the 14th and 15th spots on the roster. I know some people were confused with the Pelicans cutting the two big men centers. Those guys, I think those guys were always just practice bodies. I mean, they didn't even get to play in a preseason game. You know, they were practice bodies, and you don't want to play them in an NBA game, so I don't care who's injured. I think that Gentry would rather go small short-term than put a stiff like that in the game. I think one of these point guards makes the 14th spot, with Nate Robinson obviously being the favorite. And then the 15th spot goes to either one of the swing guys or the other point guard. But I would say right now I have a feeling that those two point guards – are going to make it. And I think what Dell is doing here is basically you can't start signing 10-day contracts until, when is it? It's like January 15th or something.
Yeah,
like
it's January something, right? Yeah.
You can't start signing 10-day contracts. Basically what he's doing is doing extended 10-day contracts. I mean, Nate Robinson's salary doesn't guarantee until January 10th, which is right before 10-day contracts start, ironically. Same with Jeff Adrian, same with Chris Douglas Roberts, Bo McCaleb, all these guys, their salaries guarantee on the 10th. Every single one of the guys who could make this this slot, their salary does not guarantee for the season to the 10th. So what Dell has effectively done is signed these guys to extended 10-day contracts where he could keep them for as long as they need. Whenever the injuries occur, okay, Tyreek Evans is back, cool. I'll cut this guard and I'll go bring in another big man to a contract that doesn't guarantee till January 10th. So I think people are looking at these roster spots and who makes the 14th, 15th spot as permanent. I see it just as basically who Dell needs on a 10-day contract for the current time. I think if Tyreek Evans is hurt and going to miss regular season games, we definitely see the two point guards. If not, then one of the point guards makes it, and then it's a battle between, you know, the other point guard, Jeff Adrian, and somebody like Dejon Jones if they want to take a chance on somebody. But I wouldn't get too attached to whoever 14 and 15 are. I think they're just basically 10-day contracts that will continue to extend till whenever Dell doesn't need them, and then he'll coldly cut them and bring in the next guy at the position of need he has.
Yeah, I agree. Just for fun's sake, and you're not Dell, okay? Let's say for some reason Dell decides he needs a week vacation in the Bahamas, and he's going to be incommunicado with the team, And he says, you know what? My good buddy, Michael McNamara, we've been hanging out. I really respect that dude. He's going to come down here and he's going to make the decision who the 14th and 15th guy on this team is while I'm gone. Cause you know, I don't care. They're going to be gone in a month. So Michael McNamara shows up. He comes strutting in all cool and stuff and says, says, hey, I don't even care about you guys. I'm not even going to watch what you've done in practice. I just want these two guys to stay, and you're making a snap decision right there based on what you know right now. Which two guys are you taking? Who do you like?
I would take Nate Robinson and Dejon Jones. And my Nate Robinson thinking is I put up a post on our site today. I think there's a chance he could be what Leandro Barbosa was last year. And you said that, you know, Nate Robinson's numbers and you're starting to see a decline with your, you know, by watching him. And his numbers are definitely declining. I agree. You know who else was like that? Leandro Barbosa for 4 years before he got to Golden State last year. I mean, Leandro Barbosa had to go to Brazil just to prove himself to NBA GMs again. And even before that, I mean, he was just simply not a good player after he left Gentry in Phoenix. And, you know, he comes back in. He just has a kind of combo guard role where he was always on the court with another guard, whether it was Livingston or Curry last year. He just got to play at a solid pace and then also got to play with freedom in Gentry's system where, you know, a guy like Barbosa or a guy like Nate Robinson, you try to put the handcuffs on him. And you'll limit the bad things, but you also won't get a lot of the good things. And I think there's a chance. And I put the piece up today. Their numbers, just their historical numbers, are eerie. I mean, just starting off, the two guys, Barbosa and Nate Robinson, have the exact same career PER, exactly the same, 15.6. You're looking at a bunch of other categories that are, you know, within a 2-3% differential of each other. You know, you're talking about guys who like to shoot the three, who also could get into the paint. And with, you know, very similar usage rates, both guys are low turnover guys, which, you know, I think will be important. So I think that there's a chance. I mean, historically, their numbers are so close to each other going into Gentry's system, somewhere where he'll have a little bit more freedom. I would just take the chance that maybe you get a resurrection. I mean, they're both, Barbosa was a 31-year-old unsigned free agent a month before the season started last year. Nate Robinson's a 31-year-old free agent. I mean, there's just so many things that are similar. I would take the chance on that. And then Bryce Dejon Jones, I think he's the one guy that maybe you have a small chance that could develop and after a couple years be a poor man's Danny Green. So I would take it. I don't think Jeff Adrian is good enough to where, you know, even if I needed 10 minutes early in the season, I would really rely on him. I'd rather just go small ball. So I would have no use for him short term, and he doesn't have potential long term. So those would be mine. How about you?
So I agree on Bryce Dejon Jones. It's just something about, I don't know what it is. He just always feels like he's trying to do the right thing and is usually in the right place and is usually making the right decision. Like, I just feel like his floor is pretty high as far as smart basketball goes from what I've seen. Now, I don't think he's got like a huge ceiling above that either, but I just feel like if you want a guy who's going to go in and not kill you, and he's going to have a couple nice moments scoring or hitting an open shot, he's the kind of guy who could probably do it for you. So I don't know. I kind of like the guy, and I like his length too. So as for my second person, I was going with Jeff Adrian actually. I'm not enamored of Nate Robinson. Bo McCaleb, you know, he might have won the Italian League MVP in 2011, but his numbers have gotten worse since then. And if he can't even maintain his numbers in the Italian League and in the Euro League, that's going to be a problem when you hit the NBA. And you know, Nate, I just don't feel like there's a lot there. And Jeff Adrian, he's older, but the guy works like a dog. He's going to get you. He is a better Lance Thomas. That's how I would explain him as a player. So I think that's a decent person for your 14th guy. He's been around. He should get a chance, and I think he might be okay with Ashiq and Ajinsa and Babbitt out. You know, if he came in and did Dante Cunningham-like things without the jumper for 10 minutes a game, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I guess I like the idea of this team small. I think this team's going to go small in the playoffs. So I really don't mind if they do some of it here early in the season and work on it, get some of those minutes in. I don't know. I don't think they need to bide time. I would rather see this team play small and fast and up tempo in the way that they're going to have to play in playoff series to win championships than, you know, just have them get away and play a little bit more traditional, et cetera. So I'm good with a lot of guys who could score, who could move the ball. I mean, preseason game again, unfortunately we didn't get to see it, but they played, pretty small. And Kendrick Perkins was a plus 12 in 14 minutes. They got off to a huge lead with Perkins at center. And I mean, if they could get 10 minutes out of him these first couple of games, I don't see the need
really?
For another stick.
Perkins?
I mean, okay. Sure, why not? at least for the Orlando game, I don't know. But I really don't care that much about these games. I mean, again, if we're talking about, let's say, 6-7 games, that's really nothing. That's almost the equivalent of one game of an NFL season, you know, just slightly more. So I'm just really not that worried about it. But what I would want from these spots is, you know, somebody who, when we are back at full speed, can maybe make a contribution here or there. I can't see Jeff Adrian making a contribution to this team, in any way when everybody's healthy or in the playoffs. Like, so I would just take a chance on those guys. And like I said, Nate Robinson's numbers went down last season with the Clippers, and even you talked about it with Chris Douglas Roberts. That's where role players go to die, man.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a role player and you had any kind of decent season, go to LA and you will fall off of a cliff and just pray to get out of there where you could have a resurgence like Jared Dudley. So I'm going to take last year with a grain of salt. The year before that, he was slightly above average. And the year before that, he was, you know, he was really good.
Pretty good.
So I would just take a chance there.
Yep. I do want to say, though, I have to care a little bit because this is just the bald facts staring us in the face. There are 96 minutes available in our backcourt. We came into this season, and I expected five players to be sharing those minutes with Jrue Holiday, Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, Norris Cole, and Quincy Pondexter, who I feel is a little better as a shooting guard than a small forward. The minutes right now in this last game we just saw, there was 85 minutes available to people other than that because of injuries. 85
yeah.
of 96.
Yeah,
and when the season starts, Jrue Holiday will take it back four more of those minutes. And Eric Gordon, if he's playing, is what, 32?
Yeah, no, I fully expect – I mean – again, we'll get the Tyreke injury news sometime this week. I'm hoping for the best, definitely not expecting it. But there is a very good chance, I would say, that Nate Robinson could lead the team, all point guards in minute. He'll play more point guard than anybody else on opening night. But, I mean, again, we always care about the now. I'm fine. I'm fine with you know, a slow start. I'm fine with Anthony Davis racking up insane numbers and getting the MVP narrative out there even more at the beginning. And then when they start winning, it continues. But I'm fine with all of that. This team, I know you don't feel the same as me. I cannot possibly see this team missing the playoffs. Spoiler alert, they will be in part two of this podcast because we're going from worst to first. I'm really not all that concerned with the first couple of games. I am concerned more about the trend, and, you know, I hope that stops. But before we start on the preview, I mean, the last thing of good news, yeah, we are not getting many minutes from him now, but Drew Holiday is saying he is pain-free. He is saying he feels well. In this game, he only got to play 11 minutes, but, I mean, in the highlights, his two shots were actually part of the highlights. He goes 2 for 2. He looked really smooth. 4 assists. I mean, in 11 minutes, the Pelicans were plus 13 when he was on the court. I'm thinking way more about March, April, May, and June than I am about November and December. And I just feel like there's a really solid chance that this guy, he won't be an all-star this year because of the minutes he plays, but he will be playing at an all-star level as the Pelicans head into the playoffs. And if you have an MVP caliber player and an all-star caliber player, it's not like the rest of the roster is too shabby. I really like this team's potential as they come down the stretch.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see, because Drew Holiday's been a terror out there in the minutes that he plays. So let's move on to the next part of the podcast. What we're going to do here, last time we rolled through the Eastern Conference, we had 5 categories. If you don't remember what they are, it is contenders. These are guys that we basically think they have a pretty solid chance of winning the title, and they're that good of a team that seeing them in the finals wouldn't surprise us at all. Then teams I'm calling I got this. These are just teams, they're in the playoffs. Like, it would take serious injuries to knock them out from that situation. And next category is hoping something weird happens. So these are the guys that are, you know, you kind of look at them and say, oh, they could make the playoffs, but no one's going to take them seriously even if they do. So they're just kind of hoping some player comes out of nowhere, or, you know, some horrible injury happens to all the other teams that lets them come in and really tear up the place. And then the last two categories, which is what we're going to be talking about right now for the rest of this podcast, is meh. These are the teams that, yeah, that team played. And then garbage, which can be just as fun as the contenders at times, because it's really fun to make fun of garbage. So, Michael, I have 2 teams in my garbage tier. How many teams do you have in your garbage tier?
We agree. I got 2 as well. And I'm pretty, I would hope that we have the same ones, but there's a third team that might have snuck in there. So I'm curious, who are your 2?
So there was a third, you're right. There's a third team I really thought about sliding into garbage. But in the end, I think they're just going to be a team like no one cares that much about. So my 2 teams are the Los Angeles Lakers and the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That's my garbage, too. Isn't it nice to have the Lakers in the garbage?
It is. But, and I love, like, if you go to ESPN.com NBA page right now, the top 2 stories are about Kobe and how Kobe's going to be sitting out the last 2 preseason games because they want him ready for the regular season, and that Kobe's feeling good and healthy. Like, who cares? Like, this team is going – Kobe could, like, actually return back to the season he should have won MVP, which was, what, 2004 and 5, I think it was, when he scored 35 a game. And this team is still going nowhere. Like, it is garbage.
Have you ever been that delusional about a great player? Like, I could completely understand – you know, believing that a great player still has greatness. It's got to be weird to see Willie Mays, you know, striking out and being terrible. And it's, you know, it's weird right now for me to see Peyton Manning looking like a below average quarterback. I get it, but I've never personally been as delusional as people are about Kobe Bryant. Like, if he had any other name but the same skill set, last couple years, whatever, I mean, he would be a complete non-factor. I mean, he wouldn't even be, he's not even Eric Gordon, you know, it's so, he's not even Wesley Matthews. So, I don't understand, but Yeah, I completely agree. And what I love about the Lakers being terrible is the potential that they could be terrible and not get a draft pick.
That's right, because they only protected the top three.
Top three, yeah. Top. And then otherwise it goes to Philly, who'll just waste it. So, you know, it'll basically be a net neutral for everybody involved. So, that's the best case scenario. The Lakers are as bad as we think, and then they get the fourth pick, give it to Philadelphia, and then they spend it on somebody who never plays for them.
Yeah, they'll get another center.
Or an international guy who has no desire to be there. So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so who do you want to start with first? Should we talk more about the actual Lakers roster? Is there guys on this roster that even interest you a little bit?
The guy I want to get your opinion on is, you know, we saw this when the Pelicans had terrible teams. You would have to have a guy who put up decent numbers, you know, just because numbers are going to be there regardless. And we started talking about how a guy could be a foundation piece, and inevitably, you know, they weren't. They were just putting up good numbers on a bad team. What do you think Jordan Clarkson's career looks like? It's all said and done. I mean, was he a below average player putting up good numbers for a period of time on a team that was terrible and nobody scouted or took seriously? Or do you fully expect him to continue upwards and for him to be a major piece like most Lakers fans think he's going to be?
I think if I had to give him a top tier ceiling, I could say Jarrett Jack, who, if you're being serious about Jarrett Jack's career, because he has been a starter in places and he's going to be a starter again this year. He really is a top tier backup guard. And I think that's Jordan Clarkson's ceiling. If he turns out to be, you know, a guy less than that, it wouldn't shock me either. Like, if he ended up being, I don't know, Aaron Brooks, who had, like, one amazing season and then spent a bunch of years just trying to stay in the league, even though he had moments where he was amazing. I could see him doing that, too. So, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Jordan Clarkson, like, in 3 years he will be out of the league and no one will even remember him? Or do you think he's got at least a chance to stick?
No, I mean, I think he could be, like you said, like an 8th, 9th, 10th man on a decent team. It could be I feel like guys like this, like on these bad teams, they then start to think they're more than they really are. And
well, let's give you this question right now, because he just signed a big contract this summer. So whose career would you rather have, Corey Joseph's or Jordan Clarkson's?
Like, I think Joseph will have a better career, because I think that he knows he's a role player and will accept it and find a way in it. What I think Clarkson's career could head towards is a Marcus Thornton type career, where he puts up numbers on a terrible team, some other bad team, you know, with a stupid front office pays him for that, and then, you know, he doesn't live up to expectations. He gets traded around at the contract.
Did you just call Sacramento signing Jordan Clarkson next year?
Is he a free agent next year? I don't know. Whenever he's a free agent,
he's a second rounder. So
yeah, or Philly will waste some of their money on him or whatever. Some other bad team will think that he could be a foundation piece based off the numbers he put up on a bad team. Like, I think it's really dangerous when average players put up big numbers, because then it's hard for them for a while to, you know, be a role player. Where somebody like Corey Joseph comes into San Antonio, you're just happy to get minutes, and, you know, you'll do whatever's asked of you. So, I don't know. Jordan Clarkson is a guy I don't believe in as much as Lakers fans do. And the other one, and this is a guy I didn't like coming into the draft, it doesn't really have anything to do with injury, but I was never sold on Julius Randle, and now a year coming off of an injury and then having all of these guards who are just going to be jacking ups. I mean, D'Angelo Russell's going to pass the ball, yeah, but he's going to get his shots too. You got Lou Williams, who, he runs the pick and roll, but it should just be called the pick, because it doesn't matter what the other person does. He's going to shoot off of it. Jordan Clarkson, Nick Young, Kobe Bryant. Tell me how Julius Randle is going to get the shots to develop. And you know, I mean, he's not there for his defense. So if I had to put Julius Randle in one of the worst situations to possibly develop, even though I didn't believe in him, I still believe almost any player in the right situation, you know, could be quality. I think this is almost the worst situation you could put Julius Randle in. Oh, and oh yeah, Roy Hibbert's going to be down there too, clogging up the space for you offensively. So you're going to basically have to be a mid-range guy, something that you did okay, but you're not good at by any stretch, where your post game would be ideally where you make your bread and butter. So I think that this team's almost already forgetting about Randle, and I wouldn't be surprised if he never develops in LA.
Okay. So you think the floor for Julius Randle's, what is it as low as, like, say, Derek Williams?
I thought Derek Williams, I mean, at least he could create some of his own. I'm thinking like Stromile Swift without the defense.
Okay.
Like,
all right. Yeah. So what do you think his ceiling is? Cause I'll be honest. My feeling for Julius Randle, his ceiling was David West.
Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, again, David West, imagine putting David West in another situation. I mean, wasn't he basically put in the perfect situation?
I mean, he played for 2 years before he got a shot.
Oh, I know. I mean, but by the time he was ready to play, he was put with the perfect point guard for his game.
That's true.
Russell
could be that. I believe in Russell. So.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you got Clarkson, Nick Young, Lou Williams, Kobe Bryant.
I'm trying to do some sort of positive spin here.
Yeah, I mean, plus you're not going to be playing at a fast enough pace to get enough shots for all that. Yeah, I'm really not a believer in him. And the only other guy I'm really interested in on this roster is Roy Hibbert, who's obviously just a 1 year rental. They're using each other. You know, I could even see the Lakers trading him at the deadline this year and maybe getting something from him. But, I'm hoping the guy turns it around. And basketball always ebbs and flows. I could see the big man becoming valuable. I mean, Golden State kind of caught everybody off guard. You know, every single coach now has looked at what Golden State did over the summer and where the NBA is trending. And they're going to find ways to offset it and punish teams for doing that. So I'm just curious to see if Roy Hibbert could kind of get back on track. Because, I mean, 2 years ago, I would say most people would have said he's one of the, you know, the top five centers in the league. And this year he was just given away.
Yeah. So let me ask you, just in a vacuum, salaries aren't coming into it. Would you rather have Roy Hibbert or Omer Asik?
For this team with Gentry and with Ehrman, I would say Asik, but I could probably find 5 to 10 situations around the NBA where I'd rather have, Hibbert. So I wouldn't say in every situation, but for us specifically, I would rather have Asik.
Yeah. I'm leaning the same way just because I think the part about Asik that is so undervalued is he was the third best rebounder in the league. I mean, period. Like, he had the third best rebound rate in the league last year, and Roy Hibbert has never been a very good rebounder. So I just, like, there is, this team needs somebody to rebound the ball other than Anthony Davis. Asik gives us that for some portion of the game. It helps them out on the boards and makes the game a whole lot easier for Davis. So anyways, that's Los Angeles Lakers. I don't really have much else I want to add about them. I'm the only person I'm really interested in on the team, period. Like, the only one I care about even slightly is D'Angelo Russell, and that's just because I was kind of a fanboy of his going into the draft. So
yeah.
Let's move on to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I don't know if it really matters. If you had to today, just for this season, so not building going forward, if you had to pick one of these teams for this season, who do you think is going to be a better team, the Lakers or the Timberwolves?
I would just say it could go either way, but I would say if you ran the season 100 times, Minnesota finishes ahead of the Lakers, maybe 55 of them, and it's only because I could see that team more often than not having fun and wanting to play and wanting to win, and I could see the later Lakers imploding and Kobe moping and whining and yelling at people at practice, and, you know, D'Angelo Russell kind of being like Kobe was early in his years and just wanting to take over the team, and who's this old guy who can't even shoot any? Like, I could see the Lakers thing imploding, where I think the Minnesota guys like each other and want to play, and Garnett will have them pumped up. So I would say more often than not, Minnesota would finish ahead of L.A.
Okay.
What about, I mean,
I take the Timberwolves more like 70 times out of 100.
Yeah.
The part is, like, we forget some of the pieces that's still on this team that aren't bad. Like, Pekovic is still here. I know he's hurt a lot, but if he plays a good 50, 60 games, that's impactful. He's a good basketball player. I liked Tyus Jones coming out of the draft. They still got Andrew Wiggins. They got Karl Anthony Towns, who people like sleep on because his numbers weren't amazing in college because he didn't play a lot of minutes. And, you know, they still have Kevin Martin, who's as good of a six-man scorer as you could possibly want on a team. And Kevin Garnett's insane. So it'll be fun, and I think they've got some good people on the team.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you're talking about talent versus knowing how to win in the NBA, and they don't have many of those guys, and the guys that they do have are too old to really be able to do it. Like, Andre Miller and Kevin Garnett are basically quasi-assistant coaches on this team, which is good to have, but at the end of the day, if you're trying to win games, neither one of them is probably on the court at the end of the game, which means you're relying on, you know, a bunch of young guys. And on occasion, those guys will go off, and I love the individual talent. I think they have too much of the same stuff. I don't see a diversity in their talent where I think that they're really hard to defend. But, I mean, I like the two cornerstone pieces, and I think this team is 2 years of very lucky but very good moves away from being the team that I'm most scared of for the end of the decade. I mean, if they really, so far, I think they have the Harden and the Westbrook piece. I wouldn't call either of these guys a Durant, but I think they have the Harden and the Westbrook piece. If they get a Ben Simmons and then they find an Ibaka somehow, you know, I think this team is 2 years of good luck and good moves away from being that team that I'm really scared of at the end of the decade.
It's possible. I just want to get your general feeling about Andrew Wiggins because, you know, he won the Rookie of the Year. He scored, you know, I think it was 17 points a game. But a lot of this is volume. When Kevin Durant was a rookie, he scored 20 points a game, and it was all volume, and he was extremely inefficient, and all the advanced metrics people murdered him. And I think a lot of the advanced metrics people learned their lesson because they wrote how awful Kevin Durant was for basically a year and a half, and then he turned into Kevin Durant, and they all kind of like were shut up. And you never heard a peep out of them other than, wow, Kevin Durant had a historical turnaround, and then they never talked about it again. So I kind of feel like Wiggins is benefiting from Durant coming before him, that nobody wants to write the piece that Andrew Wiggins is one of the worst players in the NBA right now, because his efficiencies and he's pretty poor. He's not a great rebounder. He's not a great – doesn't have many steals, doesn't pass the ball very much. But Andrew Wiggins doesn't ever come across to me as like a Kevin Durant multidimensional player. He comes across to me as – more limited than that. So handicap it for me. Do you think Andrew Wiggins is more likely to become a Paul George top tier small forward kind of guy, or more likely to end up like Rudy Gay? Which would surprise you more?
So that's weird that you said that name, because the exact thing I was going to say is I think he's going to be Rudy Gay with Paul George's defense. That was literally what I was going to say before you put those two players out there. I loved Andrew. I mean, whenever I see a 19-year-old with a post-up game, I get excited because, I mean, that's incredibly rare. It took LeBron till his mid to late 20s to get a post-up game. And Andrew Wiggins had one of the best post-up games for a wing that I saw last year. I mean, he's really good down there. You know, he's a good shooter. But, yeah, I don't see multidimensional. But I think, you know, when it comes to pass, I think he'll be a 20 to 22-point-per-game guy who doesn't give you a ton in other categories, but is a lockdown defender. I don't see all around Paul George. I see Rudy Gay's offense with Paul George's defense, but that's still a top five small forward and, you know, a top 12 wing player in the league. So I think he's good. Like I said, I think he's going to be the equivalent of what Harden was for the OKC teams before he was an MVP guy, but a very, very good fringe all-star, you know, caliber player. So I think they have a chance again. If they get somebody like Ben Simmons next year, that's a trio to be afraid of. So they, you know, they'll be down here in the garbage with the Lakers, but they actually have a future.
So let me ask you one more question. Ricky Rubio. I'm just in a vacuum. Do you have any interest in him as a player on a team that you're rooting for? Like, and I know our team has Jrue Holiday, and you know, let's say Jrue Holiday breaks his leg again horribly, and we basically decided we have to move on from Jrue. And so this summer they figure out a way to unload Jrue somehow. Rubio's on the market. Are you even interested in him?
I mean, I think it would be really hard to have a non-shooter in Gentry's offense. But, I mean, in general, one of my favorite pieces that I read was a couple years ago when Rubio and Kevin Love are on the same team and, you know, they were talking about the value of certain statistics and the fact that steals were actually the one that was the most valuable for a team because they were the hardest to replace and therefore they should, you know, factor into the most win shares. And I think Rubio defensively does give his team a lot on that end, especially in a league where there's, you know, so many point guards that you got to defend on every single night. You have another top tier coming your way, but I don't think anymore that you could get by with a point guard or, you know, any guard for that matter that really can't shoot. Eventually it's just going to be something that I don't care how talented the rest of your roster is, it's just going to be too much of a liability. You look what Golden State did down 2-1 against Memphis, and then they go and put Andrew Bogut on Tony Allen and basically just play a zone, and that series was over right away. I just don't think that in this NBA that you could have a guy with that much of a liability. So I don't know how Ricky Rubio, I don't care what the other four starters are, he's not going to be on a championship team. And if he really ever wants to play at that level, he's going to have to be a backup, which sounds crazy to say.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I was just thinking about this the other day is, back when I first started following the NBA and before there's all, I understood all the advanced statistics, I had a friend who always talked about players. They were either scorers or shooters. All wing guards, they were all either scorers or shooters. And shooters were guys who could shoot like crazy but basically could not get to the rim and score. And scorers were those guys who could get to the rim but they could never shoot. And the combination of a shooter-scorer, like, in his mind, didn't even really exist. Ricky Rubio is the anti-combination of that. He's an anti-scorer. He can't shoot. He can't score. Like, this guy shoots, like, 40% at the rim. I can shoot 40% of the rim, and I'm fat and terrible at basketball.
Oh, yeah, but you're Kevin Durant on NBA 2K15,
that's
apparently.
That's very true. I am Kevin Durant on NBA 2K15.
Yeah.
I haven't played 16 yet, so.
Yeah. All right. I mean, but just devil's advocate, let's say that they realize that Rubio's not their future. They love Tyus Jones, and they even want to play LaVine at the point. Is there any team out there that you could see Rubio going to, and now it bumps them up from quasi-contenders to contenders or contenders to championship favorites. Like,
you know what I would absolutely love to see? Ricky Rubio go to the Dallas Mavericks. And I know Jason is screaming at me right now because he hates them so much. But if there's anybody in the league who could turn Ricky Rubio into a good NBA basketball player, it's Rick Carlisle. Like, they went after and got Rondo, and Ricky Rubio is a more extreme in some situations versions of Rondo, but he has a good attitude. So he would basically bring everything they were looking for in Rondo to that team. And I would love to see what Rick Carlisle could do with a guy like that. I think that would be fascinating.
How about this trade? What if the Utah Jazz were to offer up Trey Burke and Rodney Hood for Rubio?
Oof.
So that Minnesota gets another, you know, shooter in Hood that maybe they could develop and go long term with. And now Utah, who already had a tremendous defense last year, adds Rubio. You have Rubio at the point of attack, Rudy Gobert protecting the rim, and you just go all in on that, and you just become the stingiest defense, and, you know, you try to win Detroit Pistons style, whether it was, you know, well, late 80s. The Pistons don't get enough credit back then for how good their offense, you know, some offensive players were, but... You go all in, you try to be the best defensive team in the league and hope Gordon Hayward takes the next step. What would you think of Rubio on the Jazz?
I'll be honest. I think you just described the Indiana Pacers, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? Is like Gobert is a slightly better version of Hibbert. And Rubio is a slightly better version than Hill, but Hayward's a slightly less version of Paul George. But really, that team is like that Indiana team was all in on defense, really strong defense, number one in the league for 2 years running, just great. And they could not score a lick. And the same thing would be true with the Utah Jazz. Like, so you could see them definitely making some noise in the Western Conference if that's the case.
Yeah.
You got to remember that Indiana team made it pretty far, but it was the Eastern Conference. And you got to remember the Western teams that are contenders are usually top 10 in offense and top 10 in defense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think Utah's going to be a contender no matter what they do moving forward. It's just it's getting value where you can. But, yeah, so Minnesota, I these are the two teams, and there's probably two or three more, but these are two that I would – you know, I can't see a world in which they possibly make the playoffs. So how about your next tier? You said there was almost another team that you put in this garbage tier. Who's that team?
I got four teams in my meh decision. And again, these are the teams that I think, like, people will just, by the end of the year, nobody is going to be turning to watch them on League Pass. It's not even like you're watching a train wreck. This is like, just a team that, you know, they got a couple players that are NBA players that I kind of like, but the team's not fun. They're not interesting. They're not going anywhere. They're not even interesting for a draft position watch. So, meh. And the team that I almost put in garbage, but I put in meh just because some of the players I find a little bit exciting, that is the Denver Nuggets.
Mm.
Did you put them... You're almost garbage team, or no, not at all?
They're in this category, but they were not the team that I had that I was considering putting in the garbage.
All right, so let's talk the Nuggets, and we'll talk your team that you wanted to toss into the garbage. So Nuggets, something about Moutier interests me. I know he can't shoot. The people say he can't shoot, but. This is a team that has Danilo Gallinari. If he stays healthy, he can be really fun to watch. He's a lot of havoc in a lot of different ways, and he's kind of fun. It's got, you know, Nurkic, who, if anybody watched him last year, he was a bull and fun to watch. He was really, really powerful down low and had a lot of post moves for a guy who's 20. Fareed is always entertaining. And, you know, they have Moutier running the point, and if that guy – even touches his potential, he's going to be better than Ty Lawson in this league. He, not this year, but he will be. And I don't know, I just think they could be fun to watch, but they don't have a prayer in going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I have them a little bit better than you do. I think, you know, the fact that they gave Chandler and Gallinari extensions and they're not just, you know, playing this what you would expect them to play of, oh, we're going to stink, we're rebuilding, you know, we don't care if we win, so why should the players? And I think by the middle of the season, that those are the teams you look for that are just falling apart and selling pieces and don't care. And those are the teams that I think are going to be at the bottom of the pack. Denver's not doing that. I mean, they extended two of their players. You know, Malone's going to give Farid a good look, and he's been playing well in the preseason. I think they have a lot of depth. They have what I still consider a great home court advantage, especially when you have a ton of depth and you could run and run and run and you're used to that elevation. So I think they're going to be a little better than you. They obviously don't have a superstar, but they could go. I mean, they have a lot of guys on their bench that I would love right now in our you know, our time of being hurt. They have King Joffrey also.
They do.
they have a lot of bodies. You never know. I mean, Gary Harris was a guy that hugely disappointed last year, but he's a shooter and somebody people expected a little more from. I mean, maybe it was Shaw in the system. And then finally, I mean, Mike Malone, I didn't really get the hire when it happened because, you know, I figured they'd want to play more up-tempo. But, you know, after listening to Malone with Zach Lowe and knowing that the defense is going to be solid and he got way more out of Sacramento than, you know, I would have expected, I think that they're going to outperform their talent slightly. So I don't think that they're going to be the third worst team in the West.
It's possible. Yeah, and there is this fact, too, like, and I don't know why I feel this way, because obviously I didn't watch a single of his games in China, but in my head, the player with the second highest chance of being a superstar out of this draft class, for some reason, I feel like it's Moutier. Am I stupid in thinking that?
Oh, he was my guy. I mean, I said that it was Towns and Moutier, that it was... Those were by far the two best guys in the draft to me. So, no, I don't think you're crazy at all. I think, you know, I believe that he could at least be a threat from the outside. I mean, does anybody forget how Chris Paul was not a good shooter his rookie year at all?
Nope.
He lived by getting to the line and playing smart. So, you know, I still think it's possible for him. But, yeah, he was my guy in the draft, and I don't believe in this year, and I think there'll be a lot of nights where it's really tough for him as a rookie point guard in the West. But, I don't think this team will be as bad. The other team I had close to the garbage, and it's just because, I mean, if you know me by now, you know that I hate, you know, large amounts of turnover and not really having an identity. The Portland Trailblazers basically have Damon Lillard and a whole new team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just, again, if you're just talking about talent and if I'm playing the game on Xbox, maybe I'll take Portland over Denver. But I don't know how you have that much turnover, and I don't really know who or what guys' roles are on this team. I mean, are they really going to play Myers Leonard at power forward? You know, are they going to play him and Plumlee together? Does that mean Aminu's going to be a small forward? Because I thought that Aminu's best value would be as a power forward on a small team, and I thought that's where they were going initially, and, you know, it doesn't look like they're going that way because they went out inside at Davis. They got to give Noah Vonleh minutes after trading for him. So it looks like Aminu's going to play almost solely at small forward, so I don't like that. Same with Harkless. Harkless is another guy that if you told me he was going to go to a rebuilding team as a small ball four, I would have some interest, but now try to peg him into a traditional three. I like McCollum and what I saw last year in the playoffs. You know, but now Gerald Henderson's going to steal some of his minutes, which they're going to need because they're going to have to play defense. I would have liked to see them go small and up tempo and kind of push all these guys up. And instead of trading for Plumlee, maybe trade for another small guy and you start Aminu and Leonard at the 4 and 5, something like that. But I don't really like their roster construction. I don't like how much turnover they've had. I think Lillard, I think his efficiency is going to go way down. I think, he might put up more points per game. His usage is going to be insane. But I think his efficiency is going to go way down. I don't see anything on this team I like defensively. So I could actually see a scenario in which they're dead last in the West. I think that's possible. So they're my third worst team. Sell me on them. Give me their best case scenario.
So their best case scenario is they could have one of the weirdest inside out teams, or actually outside in teams, you've ever seen. And I'm kind of thinking along the lines of, do you remember the old Bucks teams with Ray Allen and Big Dog Glenn Robinson and Sam Cassell?
I love those teams. Who the heck on this roster is anything like Ray Allen or Glenn Robinson?
So I'm not saying anyone's like Ray Allen, but it wouldn't shock me if Vonleh turned into something pretty interesting in a weird power forward, small forward kind of role.
This year?
Like, if he's going to be thrown to the Wolves, yeah. I 100% expect that Vonleh is going to get a lot of minutes this season. And he should. They should just see what they got and put him out there. But McCollum, I think, he was an amazing college scorer. He showed it at big times last year that he could do it. And I feel just those Sam Cassell, well, actually it was more Glenn Robinson and Ray Allen, but those teams, the usage was all in the backcourt. It was all from the perimeter. And I fully expect that McCollum and Lillard are going to be shooting like 30% usage rates for the entire season for this team. And you could just see a whole lot of pick and rolls where Vonleh and Leonard are setting picks. Those guys are flashing to the basket and passing it back out and pick and pops or draining three pointers by standing behind those two big guys. And there's no defense going to be played on this team. Like that is the one thing. Like they don't like the one thing that's always missed about those Bucks teams is they had guys like Anthony Mason and what was his name? The center, Irving.
Irvin Johnson?
Irvin Johnson. Those guys sucked offensively, but they did everything you wanted them to do defensively. They were really, well, actually, Mason didn't even suck offensively. He was okay offensively. But, like, those teams had a really defensive foundation that was pretty strong. I feel like this team is going to have a very good offense. And now maybe very good, a little strong. I wouldn't be surprised if they were like a 12th best offense in the West. In the league. 12th best offense, period.
Yeah, I don't feel that way at all. I mean, I think that Bucks team, you need three fantastic, not even good, but I mean, one stellar. I loved Glenn Robinson, so I would say two stellar and
you
one.
You liked Robinson that much?
Oh, he was still to this day the best college basketball player I'd ever seen in my life. Okay. I've never seen a better.
I would agree that.
So, I mean, I thought, I was a bigger Vin Baker fan than Glenn Robinson, but that was earlier. I'm a fan of Damon Lillard late in games and, his clutch shots, whatever. I really thought that he benefited from so many other guys being a weapon, and Batum and Wesley Matthews, like they had good passers on that team as well. And obviously Aldridge being the focal point, I don't think Damian Lillard is an all-star player without, the talent around him. I think he's a very nice player. Still, if you were to tell me completely healthy, they're both completely healthy for the rest of their careers, I'd still take a Drew Holiday over Damian Lillard. And you put Drew Holiday with a bunch of scrubs, and I'm not thinking that that's a good team in the West. So I don't know. Like I said, I could agree with your assessment if they would have put Aminu at the 4 Leonard at the five, and then instead of Plumlee had another wing, you know, that could have been the score that you're talking about, where they could have played five out. But I didn't like what they wound up. They're kind of stuck in between small ball and traditional, and I think they're going to be bad at both, and, you know, obviously not great at either. So, that's the misstep they took. If you get Mason Plumlee out of here and get me, you know, another scoring small forward and then bump everybody up a spot in the rotation, I would like this team a little more, but I think they're still a little too traditional to be as good offensively as you think they're going to be, and I think they're going to be terrible defensively.
All right, so any chance that they run a lineup out there of Alfarik Aminu, Damian Lillard, Noah Vonleh, Mason Plumlee, and Myers Leonard, and one big guy comes out and sets a pick for Lillard out where the Portland Trailblazers symbol is, that giant symbol they have all over the place. And he sets a pick out there, and Lillard launches a three with his foot still on the symbol at midcourt. And all the rest of the guys just crash the boards. Like, all the big men are just offensive rebounders. And if they get the rebound, they pass it back to Lillard to set another pick, and he launches another three from there.
Yeah.
He was one of the most impressive 40-foot jump shooter I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, why not? They're not going to guard him out there, so yeah, go for it. I mean, that's might as well take a shot. Yeah, I don't – or maybe they'll do like the Rock and Jock basketball where they'll put a 25-point circle out there somewhere and Lillard could hoist from there. Then they would have a shot. But yeah, I can't see a scenario in which this team makes the playoffs. I can see a scenario in which they're dead last in the West. I mean, if Damian Lillard gets hurt, seriously, they're dead last in the West, right?
Yeah.
They're one injury away. And then again, I'm not the biggest Damian Lillard fan, especially with a bad supporting cast. So I think this team finishes anywhere between 12th and 15th. So those are who's, so you said you had four in this category. Who's your next one?
I do. Next one is the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
And I'm just, you know, I've been smashing the Phoenix Suns for 2 years before this. Like, I've thought they were a bad team before this, and I just think they got worse. Like, and I love Tyson Chandler. Like, this is my problem with the Suns. Like, I just can't figure out who's doing what on this team really anymore, and they feel like they're always on the edge of, like, descending into some sort of weird chaos, but they don't. And Tyson Chandler's 33. He's an injury risk to begin with. His defense is probably slipping a bit from what we used to know and love, and that's the only real addition they did to this team that ended the season terribly last year.
I could make the argument, though, that John Lohr is better than Anthony Davis. And it goes like this. DeMarcus Cousins dunked on Anthony Davis. John Lohr dunked on DeMarcus Cousins a week before. Therefore, John Lohr is better than Anthony Davis.
Probably true.
Buy it, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the Chandler signing, it sounds like they did that to try to get Aldridge, and it sounds like they actually came pretty close. It was down to them and the Spurs, so they got to do it. But I don't understand it. I mean, again, this is a team where I see players with potential blocked by guys who we know what their ceiling is and might even be declining. I mean, not only Alex Len, who I think was starting to do some good things at the end of last year, but TJ Warren's a guy who I think, you know, he could be one of those guys that if you gave him the opportunity, could score a lot of points, really start to figure out his game, and in 2 years, you know, be one of those quasi all-star guys. But and I love PJ Tucker as much as anybody, but he's going to be behind PJ Tucker, and Tucker's going to be the guy that the coach trusts, and Warren's going to have a quick hook, and I don't.
And they brought in Sonny Weems from overseas because they thought he had potential to be a starter, they said.
Yeah, they gave him a legitimate contract. Yep. So even, you know, Devin Booker, he would be ideally a guy that I would like to get some minutes, but that guard rotation is just, it's weird as it is. I think Bledsoe and Knight could be nice, you know, perimeter defenders, but I don't see either one of them as... I think Bledsoe's a good on-the-ball guy. I think, you know, Bledsoe with a shooter, ironically, like Devin Booker, when he reaches his potential. But, I think that could be a good pairing. I don't really see how he works together with Knight. This team is just... It's the definition of blah and average, and everything that I like that could be good about this team seems to be behind something that's, you know, we already know what the ceiling is, but it's locked in for a couple of years. So they're in that weird state where, you know, they can't be bad enough to have great picks. And they tried to do that 2 years ago, and ironically, they were too good. I just don't see how this team ever gets out of this 9th to 12th seed range unless they blow it up, but they're really not gonna. I mean, they just locked a lot of these guys into 4 or 5 year contracts, so this is pretty much going to be the team for the next couple of years.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, this team is, like, people think of this team as fun and fast and quick paced because that's what Hornacek brought in 2 years ago. But 2 years ago, the reason why they actually were a pretty decent team was their defense hovered right around 10 or 11 all year. They were not a bad defense. And last year, it fell off a cliff. I mean, they just, if you want to hear the real reasons why they traded Dragic and Isaiah Thomas, their defense with those two guys on the floor at any point was awful. I don't know what happened to Goran Dragic because obviously he'd been pretty good the year before.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the number one reason why that team fell off the cliff last year, is their defense fell apart. And so they brought in Tyson Chandler, and you could see that as definitely, you know, this should be an upgrade to the defense. But I don't know, Brandon Knight, is he a better defender? He came from Milwaukee. They were good defenders, but was that him? I just don't feel like they brought in enough talent to really turn that defense back around again. And that means they're just kind of in no man's land, you know?
Yeah, I don't really know where they go from there. I mean, what do you think about specific to the Pelicans? How do you think they are as a matchup for the Pelicans? Is this one of the teams in the West you like the matchup for New Orleans? Do you think that even though they're not that good of a team that it's a tough matchup? How do you think you'll feel as we go against them head-to-head during the season?
I'll be honest. I think a fully healthy Pelicans team demolishes the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
I've seen them play them recently, and that wasn't the case. But in all of the situations, there's always a key one or two people on the Pelicans out. And I cannot imagine this team even being able to hang with the Pelicans.
Yeah. I feel that way pretty much about all the teams we discuss, except for, I mean, honestly, out of the teams that we've discussed so far, the Nuggets, and it's not just because of our history with them, but also because of the way they're built and Mike Malone, et cetera, they're probably the team out of the ones we've discussed that I have the most trepidation and would be least likely to chalk it up as a W, you know, on our preview podcast, let's say.
Okay.
So that's the team that you had. The next team that I had in this tier, I'm guessing you probably, I don't know if this is your fourth team. I'm just going to take a guess. For me, was the Sacramento Kings.
Nope, I had them higher.
Okay.
They're not even in my Met tier.
Wow. The Kings, I would have liked this team so much more if they would have done something with the same exact money outside of Rajon Rondo. I don't get it. I mean, the Bellinelli, you know, was an overpay for whatever that's worth. But of course, you know, you're going to have to pay a guy who's coming off of years with contenders to come to Sacramento. I don't get the Rondo signing at all. I think their best case scenario for this season is if he gets hurt and is out for the season. And they don't have to worry about giving them minutes. The other thing that confuses me is, and again, you know, I don't really care whatever positions mean and yada, 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 but why is DeMarcus Cousins so obsessed with playing power forward instead of center? And how do you imagine that it's gonna work out for him with him on the court with guys like Kufos and Willie Cauley-Stein, who, you know, you figure are not going to be able to space the floor as much. So Cousins is going to be more, you know, 17 to 20 footers, as opposed to if you put Cousins at the five and Rudy Gay at the four. I mean, do you agree with that overall strategy?
No. I mean, Cousins is a center. There's no question that he's a center and he should be playing next to the basket. The problem is Cousins is a very petulant person who has very, distinct opinions on how he should be used. And if he's not used those ways, he becomes highly unmanageable. And he likes to think of himself as a guy who can take 18 footers regularly. And last year he hit them at an okay rate. I think it was like 40% or something like that, which, you know, Anthony Davis is at 48 and Dirk Nowitzki's at 49. Like, those are the kind of guys who should be taking those shots. But, you know, as a whole, though, like, there are worse things than DeMarcus Cousins catching the ball in the high post and being asked to do something with it, because he has enough talent that he can make something happen a lot of the time. He will foul the crap out of people because there's not going to be enough room, offensive fouls, and just make stupid decisions and get turnovers because there won't be a lot of room. But there are worse things than having that be a primary part of your offense.
So sell me on why you think they're going to be better than I do.
So I think that they're going to be better than you do primarily because DeMarcus Cousins, like you always say this about Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis is clearly one of the best three players in the NBA. He is a superstar talent on a whole another level than DeMarcus Cousins is. But DeMarcus Cousins, do you agree that he's still probably one of the best 15 players in the NBA?
Skill-wise, I would go even higher than that. Is he one of the 15 guys that contributes the most to wins? I would say no. Is he one of the 10 most skilled players in the NBA? Yes. So I don't mean to avoid your question. It's just, to me, it's a very tricky line in which, I mean, even in the preseason game, we saw him foul out in 24 minutes. There's just so many ways that he takes himself out of the game, whether it's flagrant fouls, fouling out of the game, getting in his own head and giving up. I mean, you talked about the play last year where he just absolutely stood there. You know, I mean, that's somehow all that has to go into account. Over an 82-game season, he's going to find a way to, you know, work his way out of 10 to 15 games. So is he one of the 15 most valuable players over an 82-game season? I don't mean to duck the question, but I would say no. I would say that all those other factors just make his ability to lead a team to victory far below what his talent is.
Okay. So the way I look at him is I feel like he is a good enough player that having him on your team guarantees you some sort of win total, at least plus 30 now at this point. I think he's reached that point as long as he's healthy for the whole season. And last year, people, you know, their team didn't break 30 wins, but he was also out for, I think it was 18 or 20 games. So if he plays a full season, I feel like this team is probably going to win 32, 33 games, even with like the weird talent around him. I'm still a big believer of Cauley-Stein. He's going to help a lot defensively. And Rudy Gay has morphed into an actually efficient scorer, even if he's not interested on the defensive end anymore. There's a lot of weirdness around this team, but I think the talent baseline is so high that this team, if something magical did happen, like maybe, I don't know, I don't even believe that Rajon Rondo could turn into anything great. So that, you know, something clicks with really Cauley-Stein and Ben McLemore could run a really brutal pick and roll where Cauley-Stein's a mega athlete who can finish at the rim Tyson Chandler and play Tyson Chandler style defense. this team could actually be pushing for the playoffs if something weird happened, really weird happened. But that's why I have them in the hoping something weird happens category. Because, you know, they spent all that money on Bellinelli and Omri Caspi, and they brought in Caron Butler, and there's just like all these guys are just, I don't, they're all veterans, and that's what they're selling. Oh, they're veteran shooters, a helpless play, and they're just all kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting anything. I don't expect things from many rookies, especially when it comes to helping a team win, let alone Willie Cauley-Stein. I think, you know, maybe the weird thing would be Ben McLemore taking a big step and Costa Kufos showing that, you know, he was more than just a good backup, that he's a legitimate starting center who just happened to be a backup. You know, maybe similar to Omer Asik's first year in Houston, where
if Kufos put in a Marcin Gortat season, would that shock you?
Yeah, just because I think Gortat was always more skilled offensively.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't see him there, but I think he'll be better defensively. So overall value, yeah, I think that that's possible. But again, I don't get. It, to me, and especially in this era of basketball, I want DeMarcus Cousins as my center with four people around him spacing the court as much as even if he's in the high post, that's fine. Give him four outlet options. I just don't want somebody else on the block with DeMarcus Cousins. So that was just the weird thing for me. You know, I'm not a big fan of them putting him at the four. Again, I don't care about positions, but just having another guy, you know, all 35 minutes or however many he plays before he fouls out, he's on the court with somebody else clogging up the lane. So I would have much preferred to see Gay at the four and Cousins at the five and then just go with a bunch of perimeter guys outside of that. So so I guess let's end the podcast with your last team in this meh category.
Dallas Mavericks.
Wow, okay.
And, you know, I really want to, you know, smack myself for doing that. Like, I am a firm believer that in this league there are, like, four coaches that really have a heavy-duty impact to their team. And I fully and 100% believe that Rick Carlisle is one of them. That he is just a really, really good coach and really, really good at picking out what a good player is good at and making sure that that's what they get to do. And, but then I just look at this team and I can't buy into anybody on it. I can't even buy into Dirk Nowitzki anymore. The guy declined dramatically last year and sure he was still scoring, but during the part of the season where he was averaging 20 points per game, he was averaging less than 5 rebounds a game. Less than 5. He's not a multi-dimensional player in any way anymore. And like the rest of this team, like Wes Matthews, he's 29 years old and he's coming off of a very serious injury. And let's be 100% honest, he was maybe the 10th or 11th best shooting guard at before he got injured. So that puts him, what, 15th, 16th probably this season at best? Is that something that you want to spend $16 million a year on or that you can buy into as a difference maker for a team? No, there's no way. And you could just go down the entire list of everybody on this team. Darren Williams, Chandler Parsons coming off major, well, not a major, but an injury. And he, again, he was probably the 10th best small forward, 9th best small forward when he was healthy. I can't buy the talent on the team anymore, and I think that they are stealth tanking. I think they're trying to tell people that they're not, and they're going to give it a good college try at the beginning of the season, and then they're going to blame Darren Williams, and it's all going to go to hell.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my hypothesis if literally any of the 7 billion people on the planet except for Rick Carlisle or maybe Greg Popovich were the coach. Like, that is the one thing that keeps me believing that this team is going to fight for the playoffs in the face of all of the logic that says Nowitzki's old. Their center position's a mess. You know, Parsons and Matthews might not even be ready to go until January. Darren Williams is a dumpster fire. Like, all of that stuff, there's really nothing I could counter with using logic or, you know, any kind of stats to say anything else other than I believe that Rick Carlisle is going to somehow bandage this team together and get them playing above their heads until people come back from injury. And once they do, you know, then they'll play solid ball. I mean, let me ask you this. 8th seed in the Western Conference. How many wins does that team finish with this year? Because normally it's 48 to 50. I don't think it's going to be that this year. How many wins do you need to get 8th in the West?
42.
So, I mean, that's what I'm saying is, I mean, can they play better than people expect, catch people off guard early, and then play 500 ball once they're healthy? If there was any other coach, I would say no. But honestly, with Rick Carlisle, I think it's possible. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, this is a guy that I've mentioned on previous podcasts that I like. I wouldn't be shocked if Jeremy Evans, you know, plays way above his head and he's the next guy to earn a huge contract like Farouk Aminu did. JJ Barea, that's always been a guy that, you know, they seem to get crazy. I mean, Barea goes anywhere else, he's garbage. He goes to Dallas and all of a sudden he's starting and knocking other people, you know, out of their way and taking rotation minutes. I don't know. I just, like I say, if they had any other coach, I would be putting this team with Portland and maybe even below them. I believe in Carlisle, as crazy as that is.
Okay. So you don't have any other teams in the meh category?
I do not. Well,
I think by this point we had gone through 14 of the 15 teams in the Eastern Conference. So obviously the Western Conference is better, right?
Yeah, it is. It is better, and we'll talk about it more on part two, which will include our New Orleans Pelicans.
Yep. So thanks for everybody for listening to part one of our Western Conference preview podcast, and you'll hear the rest of it a little later this week.